Garrett Rohnow as the American center and score! Brian O'Neill scores the first goal in the 2018 Olympic Winter Games for Team USA. They're up 1-0 over Slovenia. Gunderson lets Little play it. Little pivoting forward. Sanguinetti a shot, save, rebound, Greenway scores! Jordan Greenway makes it 2-0 USA as he popped in a rebound off Crochelle's pads. And it's 2-0.
The Slovenian goaltender is on the bench at 6-on-5.
Picked up by Berlich. Berlich banks it out to Gregor to the left point. Looks at Robar and then shoots it into the scrum in front. Rebound, score! Berlich pounded it home. And the game is tied at 2 with 1:37 to play. Mrzak goes on top. Orbas, Tichar fell, but he gets up, takes the pass, moving in for a shot. Never got through Mrzak, a shot, he scores! The Slovenian captain ties it late and wins it in overtime. Slovenia caps the comeback with a 3-2 win over Team USA.
That's a tough matchup, LeBron on the fadeaway.
Good defense, better offense.
Jetty off the front of the rim. Kind roll for Jetty Osman.
And they're doing a good job here thus far.
LeBron right to the rack. JR, same spot, same result. Russell matched up with LeBron. Skip pass. George Hill, lob. And a beautiful look to Tristan Thompson. Rodney Hood, three ball on the way. That's good. Got outscored 13-10 with LeBron on the bench. And right back at it, LeBron with the left hand. Cavs just doing a nice job of keeping the pace. LeBron from way out. Wow, that's some range.
You know, Kobe did a heck of a job of understanding what our team needed. It just wasn't working out for us. He made the changes that he felt that best fits our team. And then it's on me to make sure the new guys that come in, that I make sure that they fit in and make it as seamless as possible. No, I think they play with a lot of poise, you know, with the Lakers as well. Obviously, they're very talented. You know, the change of scenery, and I think they're just trying to take advantage of it. For us, you know, the guys that's here, we're just trying to make them as comfortable as possible. You know, we're going to have some bumps, obviously, along this road because, you know, we all new together, but we try to make it as seamless as possible for the transition.
They had a lot of one-dimensional offensive players, everything built around LeBron James' greatness, and then a bunch of guys that did one thing. When you add guys like Jordan Clarkson, you add Hood, these are guys that can, George Hill, they can make plays off the dribble, they can spot up, catch, and shoot, they can slash, they can find people defensively. It's night and day what we saw from this team in the first half of the year.
There was just a joyous scene. We saw guys wishing each other well as they went into the All-Star break, exchanging phone numbers, telling each other, rest up, guys, stay safe, have fun. We can't wait to get back and do this again. Ty Lue, big smile on his face, and literally was miming as if he was lifting a weight off his chest and bringing it above his head and then just releasing his body to show that, man, so much has changed.
Jordan and Larry coming from the Lakers, they just, you know, they love this team. And, you know, having a superstar like LeBron on there that makes everything tick. And you just got a bunch of great players that know how to follow suit, really. They won two big games, and it's a lot of fun to watch them. They look like they're having a lot of fun. And that's what basketball is all about.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is the Extravaganza back once again on a Wednesday afternoon. Hope you're having an outstanding afternoon as we get rolling at 11 minutes past 3 o'clock. If you got your ashes today, good. If you did not get your ashes today, why? Of course, I'm speaking to Catholics. It is Ash Wednesday. It is also the day that we should ask. I hope that's a little louder. Sorry about that. It is also a day we should ask, did you get flowers or did you get chocolates? And if you didn't, you better find a last-minute place that still has some on the way home, as it is Valentine's Day. So if you did something well or if you did something right by your missus or your miz or your girlfriend or that chick you just really like, you better get moving. You don't have a whole hell of a lot of time left. Is Mrs. Cushling getting anything sweet or pretty smelling today, Jim?
Yeah, pretty much. Already did. We did the little chocolates thing.
Oh, very nice. And what did you get her?
That's what I did. I got her some chocolates, too.
I was messing with you. I was assuming she got you the chocolates. You look like you are the chocolate eater of the family. What does Mrs. Cushlin like more, flowers or chocolates?
Oh, I think that depends on her mood. But I lean chocolates.
I've never been a huge flower guy, only because, you know, well, I guess you could say the same about chocolates. They're gone soon. But you get to, like, you know, enjoy them. They're tasty. And the flowers, oh, they're so pretty. And then they're dead in three to 5 days or whatever it is. And you're on your way. But either way, you got to do it if you want to have a happy relationship. So Valentine's Day 2018, Ash Wednesday on the same day, the start of Lent. Kush, are you Catholic? I never asked you that.
I consider myself a recovering Catholic.
Recovering Catholic. So you won't be giving anything up for Lent?
No.
Okay.
Not this time.
Good. All right, fair enough. I'm supposed to. I just haven't thought of what it is yet. I put these kinds of things off. Same thing with New Year's resolutions. What am I going to do? And then come January 1st, I don't have an answer. And by January 2nd, I'm like, oh, it's too late, so I don't have to do anything. It'll probably be tomorrow. Oh, I didn't start in time, so I didn't give up anything. I'll have to work on that. All right, let's dive right into it. A lot of good stuff today. Basketball, and more basketball coming up at 3:35. Dennis Manilov will be joining us from Cleveland to talk about how about this brand new look and almost just a new Cavaliers team. I mean, we're talking about a team that couldn't stand each other, that couldn't wait to get away. As you just heard in some of the comments there, get away from one another. Now he can't wait to come to practice, can't wait to come to games. The new look, young blood, re-energizing that Cavaliers team, simply incredible. They had a game last night in which they put one on. They put one on the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that had just put about 150 up on them last month. They went out there and they took it to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They just look like an entirely new team, new guys. And I'm talking about even the holdovers. They're playing like they're all new guys. Russell Westbrook had 21 points on only 7 out of 19 shooting in this game because he's being guarded now by somebody who can guard him at least a little, as much as anybody can guard Russell Westbrook, the explosive athlete that he is. George Hill is a great two-way point guard. Paul George had 25. On 8 out of 19, so he had himself a day. Carmelo Anthony had 24, and Steven Adams had 22. They played well overall as a team, and yet the Cavaliers still won by 8. LeBron James was spectacular, 14 out of 23 from the floor, shooting well over 50%. Free throw line, think about that, too. 6 out of 10. Stop clanging those, LeBron, and have yourself a 40-point night. As it is, 37, 8, and 8 with 5 turnovers. Kind of still par for the course for him, but he more than made up for that. And the contributions, not only of the new guys, Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson, and Rodney Hood, but also the contributions of a guy who seems to have been reborn in J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith, another big night. Jim, wasn't it just yesterday we were talking about his score?
Yes, we were. Just yesterday, yep.
6 out of 10 last night against the Thunder. 6 out of 9 from distance, creating 18 points and 6 rebounds. 3 assists just for good measure, and did not turn the ball over, and played good perimeter defense. He is reborn. Maybe he just didn't like the whole Dwayne Wade, Isaiah Thomas atmosphere that was going on in that backcourt. But he looks like he is all over, or you know, he is all over it again. Larry Nance Jr. had 13 points, had himself 9 rebounds, played himself some good defense inside. That's exactly what they needed him to do. More on him coming up. Jordan Clarkson had 14 points on 6 out of 10 in 24 minutes. Very efficient minutes. Also had 3 rebounds and 4 assists. Contributions all through the stat sheet. Rodney Hood, 14 points, just 2 off his season average, just doing Rodney Hood type things, 50% from the floor, and 50% from 3. He was 5 of 10 overall and 4 out of 8 from distance. Kyle Korver's minutes have decreased dramatically, by the way. Remember, before the new guys got clear, Jim, they went down to Atlanta, and Korver got the start, and all he did was fill it up for 30. And since then, he is barely being able to get off of the bench. He had just 8 minutes played last night, only took 1 shot. And then there is Jeff Green, who continues to be an extraordinarily valuable veteran reserve off of that bench in 27 minutes. He had 10 points and 4 rebounds as well. So, I mean, I got to tell you, Jim, we're going to talk more about this with Manilov. And then, by the way, just to finish out the guest rundown for you, coming up at 4:10 or so, we will talk with David Fernandez, who writes about the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com. Pistons, just the opposite of the Cavs. As far as trending, Cavaliers trending upward with their new look lineup. Pistons trending downward with their new look lineup. That's an intriguing thing. So Manilov on the Cavs at 3:35. Our friend David Fernandez at 4:10 on the Pistons. And then we're going to talk a little baseball in the last half hour of the program. But not just because pitchers and catchers reporting, but because of some people who aren't reporting. And we'll cover that later. Kush, it's early. maybe this is still just a honeymoon period. Maybe this is, you know, an aberration, but, and maybe there's a correction to come and a step back as they try to work out the different combinations and roles. But my goodness, two games, two very good opponents, the East leading Celtics and the Western Conference Power Thunder.
All, both on the road, by the way.
That's right. And they took it to them in Boston, in OKC, and they just look, honest to God, that just looks like a brand new, a whole new franchise.
No, it does. And it, the thing that jumps out most at me of these last two games with the new guys in there is bench reactions. You know, when things are going well, even when things have been going well in the early part of this season, I haven't seen the bench act like that since early last year and before. Honestly, and this gets to part of the little issues inside the clubhouse that were going on with the previous roster, to the point where LeBron looked disengaged, nobody fit well, it seemed everybody was at everybody, it was just a general seeming dislike of everybody, almost. And so that kind of stood out to me as a non-stat kind of thing, that when things were going well yesterday and in the Sunday game against the Celtics, I saw reactions out of the bench that I haven't seen in almost a year and a half out of this team.
Totally agree. Totally agree. You know, it's like they're all one collective body again rather than a whole bunch of individuals. And you know, this is where it gets complicated for me, and I'm sure Maniloff will have more thoughts on this too. So I don't want to beat it to death. But this is where it gets complicated for me. If LeBron James is the leader that he portends to be, if he is the leader that everybody suggests he is supposed to be, why did it take a whole bunch of all new guys for this to start clicking? Is it youth? Is it because Derrick Rose is a veteran who is old and set in his ways? Dwayne Wade was a veteran, set in his ways. Isaiah Thomas, clearly a veteran who liked his ways in Boston and did not like being uprooted from where he was at all. And nobody could have led with that. Nobody could have found a way to pull those guys together along with new younger guys like Chetty Osman and reserves like Jeff Green. Is it something nobody could have done, you know, could have done better than LeBron did? Or did he not try because all he was cared about was his man crush with Dwayne Wade? He and Dwayne Wade, with their bromance, were, and this has been getting multiple, lots of play from multiple reports, that a lot of the team just did not like the fact that LeBron did not engage with them. They didn't feel like they were unified with the exploding off the bench after a bucket like you just described, Jim. They didn't feel unified with him because he was spending all of his time just in a one-on-one relationship, if you will, with Dwayne Wade. And now that Wade is gone, now LeBron's distractions are gone, and he is able to kind of meld together with the rest of this team, including all of these new guys, to pull them together and create that unified all-for-one, all-in-216 atmosphere that they have been longing for.
Yeah, and that obviously is something that was just became very visual, especially the more and more of these little reports of issues in the clubhouse, let's call it that, were trickling out as this season has gone along. And I think it stems from, you know, the pieces, while having some name recognition and or relationship with LeBron, they just didn't work right. I mean, the best part of it in terms of the previous roster was the Wade on the bench thing, but part of the reason they sent him back to Miami was because, hey, we're bringing in all these guys, so your role is going to be, you know, reduced. But
that's
outside of that,
a very small part of it, though, Jim.
Right.
I really firmly believe that's just a small part of it, the basketball part of it. Your role is going to be reduced, yes, because we have other guys who play your position, including Chetty Osman. Even the day before the trade, Jim, you heard Ty Lue say to the media after the game, I want to get him more time. I need to see more from Chetty Osman because he is earning that time. That alone, even if the trades hadn't been made, meant less Dwayne Wade. But then when the trades were made, obviously, to acquire the other guys, it was certainly a basketball thing. But I think they sent him to Miami more out of we need to get him away from LeBron because LeBron is not focused on team basketball and team building and relationship building when Dwayne Wade is here. We need to remove Dwayne Wade's influence. And what's interesting, and I've heard this on many, many, many different national sources, from many national sources, none of them are saying that Dwayne Wade did anything nefarious. He didn't do anything, you know, to create dysfunction on purpose. It wasn't like he was intending to monopolize LeBron James' time and kind of just create a, hey, man, it's just me and you and the heck with all those. Yeah. Nothing like that intentional at all. It's just how it happened. Not that it was intended to happen. It just did happen. And with him there, LeBron wasn't able to be a teammate to everybody else. And I think they sent him, if I had to guess, Jim, 60-40, maybe 65-35. We need to subtract Dwayne Wade from this equation so that we can have LeBron James back again to everybody. From you know, that standpoint, 35%, by the way, his minutes are going to be reduced anyway, and he won't be happy about that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big factor in all this. And, you know, I was a little surprised, but weirdly at the same time not surprised when reading those things in the last week or two that actually it's the whole Wade LeBron thing that is something at the core of all this.
Yeah.
Not just IT, you know, and those stories about, you know, claiming Kevin Love's sickness was fake and all that
well,
stuff.
Well, no, that was big too.
And that was big too. Don't get me wrong.
That's one of the things that sent IT. I mean, you know, we have to look at this too, Jim. It wasn't like this was all one transaction. These were multiple transactions because there were multiple causes for them and multiple needs that needed to be met here. Number one, what was Isaiah Thomas needed to go. He was a huge distraction. Yep. He was playing terrible basketball.
Yes, he was.
He can't shoot anymore. He can't explode anymore. Maybe that's a hip problem still from the injury, or maybe it's just, you know, this kind of offense that made him unable to find creases and exploit them and get through the way he did in Boston. So he's bad on the court, and off the court, he trashed Kevin Love. He trashed Ty Lue. He trashed Ty Lue's, you know, practice methods versus his in-game coaching.
Yep.
He trashed the media, saying, I'm getting too much blame here for how well we don't or how badly we are on defense. His team stunk on defense before I got here. I mean, he had to go. That had nothing to do with the Wade LeBron thing, in my opinion. That was just, this dude didn't like it here. He didn't fit here, and he had to go. So a transaction was made to get him out of there and to bring Clarkson and Nance from the Lakers was certainly a great thing. The Wade thing was a separate deal that I think, in my opinion, even if Isaiah Thomas had not been traded, I think they would have made that move with Dwayne Wade because his influence over LeBron or their combined influence with each other was making LeBron unable to be the leader he needed to be for the rest of that team, whether it be Isaiah Thomas or not. The Dwayne Wade thing had to be addition by his subtraction.
No, and I think you're right about that. And that's what a lot of this was, you know, addition by subtraction. But then you get to the guys that they do get back and they're younger. They're a little more athletic.
That's addition by addition right there.
Right. And all but Hood are signed through next year. And Hood, FYI, will be a restricted free agent because he's coming up on the qualifying offer. So they could conceivably have all four of these guys with or without LeBron, you know, coming in next year. So it accomplished both of those things. And it's still a small sample size, right? Only two games we've seen them, but their opponents, obviously, where they were, what you're seeing is incredibly encouraging.
No question about it. And there's a really interesting piece on .com right now, ESPN.com, that I would encourage people to read. And I have no reason to say that other than I just find it interesting. I'm not shilling for ESPN, but inside the 24 hours that saved the Cavaliers.
Oh, that was
season.
A good one. I read that this morning. I read that this morning. Yeah, I caught it.
It details like the timeline of the phone calls and text messages and the standoffs, and it's all of that's right in the headline that led to all of those trade deadline deals that they made. It's really fascinating to see how all this came together. And Jim, that 24 hours is going to put the Cavaliers back in the finals. I absolutely believe that the Cavaliers would not have won in the playoffs either over Boston or Toronto. They would have lost to one or the other in the playoffs on their way back to try to get to their fourth straight finals. It was just not going to happen. This 24 hours before that trade deadline is going to put them back in the finals. I don't think it's close now. unless Gordon Hayward somehow, you know, regrows his foot, and I know he is doing some work right now, and there's a chance he could come back into the playoffs, I think it would be extremely dangerous to do given the gruesome nature
right.
of the injury. I would let him heal for another 6 months until next basketball season starts.
Yeah, make him ready for September camp if you're
Amen.
Boston.
Yes. But my point is, barring some kind of amazing return by another all-star for Boston, they're not better than this Cavaliers team. Toronto is not better than this Cavaliers team, which, of course, is very, very different than the Cavaliers team before that. I think the Cavaliers walk to the Eastern Conference, out of the Eastern Conference and to the NBA Finals again, where they will face the Warriors or the Houston Rockets. And given the defense now that this team can play from the point guard position with George Hill, the plethora of shooters, the younger energy, again, it's only two games in. But my goodness, those were two impressive games over two very good teams, Boston and Oklahoma City. Let's see what the rest of it looks like in the, you know, in the post All-Star game, you know, close to the season. Let's see how it looks. But man, I'm not ready to write off this team as saying it's impossible for them to win a championship this year. Stupid as that sounds, which is two games in, Jim, with the new guys here. But I'm just watching this team play. The way they played basketball against Oklahoma City and Boston in these last two games, and how, and I know that sounds like the same thing, the way or how. What I mean is the way they played it from a physical, this is how they move the ball, this is how they score, this is how they run in transition, this is how they closed out on defense. But that's the way they played the game. But how they played the game in terms of their excitement level, the enthusiasm, as you point out, rising off of the bench, the camaraderie that was lacking before, the stuff that they showed in those two games, I'm not ready to say that that team would instantly be swept out of the finals by the Warriors the way last year's team nearly was. That's just the way that I see it. I think really it's not carved in stone that the Cavaliers cannot win a championship this year. That's how important that 24 hours was, Coach.
And lastly, you know, on that, because I totally agree with that, now they're on the All-Star break, are the Cavs. They don't even play till next Thursday, so 8 days from now, and that'll be another, even though the one player's missing from this roster, that'll be an interesting test. They're back home against Washington in that one.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's a player missing from their roster, too, with Kevin Love.
Yep, that's you know, good point. Good point.
You know, I mean, they don't have John Wall, and the Cavs don't have Kevin Love, and that's going to be another huge, huge piece. Remember, despite all of these great things that we've just seen in the last 2 days,
Kevin Love hasn't been there for
them. Kevin Love is their second-best player. Their second-best player isn't Jordan Clarkson. Their second-best player isn't George Hill. It's not Larry Nance Jr., and it's not who am I missing there? Rodney Hood. It's Kevin Love. He's an all-star. He's a double-double machine. He's a 20-10 guy, oftentimes a 26-13 guy. And when he is back healthy again, that makes them even that much more dangerous. Again, playing with guys that he likes and that who like him. Getting rid of troublemakers like Isaiah Thomas, who, for whatever reason, was trying to hurt Kevin Love. All right, it's 3:31. I got to shut up because Maniloff is waiting on the other side. Let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day does come from that win last night, 120-112 over OKC. The Cleveland bench outscored the Thunder's bench 51-20. That 31-point margin, point differential, is the largest for a LeBron James team, including the playoffs, in his career. You talk about depth. They've got it. That's a wild stat from Buffalo Wild Wings. We got Maniloff coming up after the Sports Center next.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
3:38 as the Extravaganza rolls on right here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're going to be talking NBA basketball with David Fernandez. DetroitBadBoys.com. You know what we're going to be talking about with him, right? I think we probably know this. Kush, I didn't play this for you, though, because I just kind of made it up. But we're going to be talking
Detroit basketball!
That's still one of the coolest things in the sport.
I do love that. No question.
And I hate the, you know, I hate the Pistons. I'm a Cavaliers fan. When the Cavaliers play them, I hate hearing Detroit basketball because it means they got the ball and we didn't. My team didn't. But outside of that, I just love that. It's great. We're going to talk Pistons basketball. David Fernandez coming up at about 4:10. We're going to talk Cavaliers basketball, however, right freaking now with our man Dennis Maniloff. D-Man writes for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and for Cleveland.com, and he joins us now right here in Toledo from Cleveland. Hey, D-Man, how are you, man?
What's up, Bob? What a difference a trade deadline makes. The last time I was talking with you, the Cavs were a dead team walking.
They were. They were exactly that, Dennis. I mean, I was just talking before you came on about how, you know, literally I was convinced they were not coming out of the East to make their fourth straight finals. They would lose either to Toronto or to Boston. Don't know which round it would be, second round or conference finals, but they would not win. The way that team was configured and the off-the-court problems they had, the on-the-court chemistry they had, problems that they had, all these things, I just – and now, Dennis – 24 hours of a trade deadline period, which we were just discussing, and two games, Boston and Oklahoma City, both on the road later, and now I see them as absolute locks to come out of the East and get into the finals against either Golden State or Houston.
Well, the mood around here has certainly been uplifted 1,000% based on what Kobe Altman, general manager Kobe Altman, did at trade deadline day, Thursday, February 8th. The series of trades that sent out six guys and brought in four, it absolutely changed the culture of the locker room and just as importantly, what was going on the court. So that was one of those deals, Bob, where, sometimes teams at the trade deadline, they simply need to add players. They need to add talent. In the case of the Cavs in 2018, they not only needed to add talent, they needed to subtract people because of how toxic the locker room had gotten. And Kobe Altman somehow, some way, pulled it off, despite the fact that he had basically no human assets. I mean, all he really had assets-wise were draft picks, including the coveted Brooklyn pick. He did not have a human asset because the only one was LeBron James, and he was off limits. So Altman to be able to do what he did without human assets was beyond impressive.
I could not agree with you more. Let's talk about the need to add by subtraction first, as you point out. I mean, the additions by addition, by the way, through two games, look tremendous, and we'll get to them. But guys that had to go, starting, of course, with Isaiah Thomas. I'm going to tell you something. I have no love for Isaiah Thomas based on the way he conducted himself, the way he somehow villainized and created some sort of a narrative in which Kevin Love was to blame for things. He completely, trashed that man's reputation and character, all in the process of also trashing Tyronn Lue's practice schedule, Tyronn Lue's in-game adjustments, the media's coverage of their bad defense, saying, why is everybody blaming me? The defense here sucked before I got here. All of those things he did. I have no love for him. He needed to go. He was poison in that locker room. But I will say, and tell me if you agree, Dennis, I feel bad for the guy because he was thrust into a situation that was not one of his creation. Had Kyrie Irving not decided, I don't want to play with LeBron anymore and demanded a trade, Isaiah Thomas is still in Boston right now. They weren't looking to move him. They moved him only when they found out they could get Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving is a significant upgrade. So they moved him, but he was, fifth in the MVP balloting last year, a 29-point-a-game guy, and even though he was going to be coming off of the hip problem, he was going to come off of it in Boston, where he loved, playing for Brad Stevens, whom he loved. And I feel bad that this guy was a guy looking for and may have gotten close to a max contract 1 year ago at this time, but because Kyrie Irving made a decision that he don't want to play in Cleveland anymore, this guy will be making a mid-level exception someplace next year.
Yeah, Bob, I hear you, and my sympathy, as far as a pro athlete goes, can only go so far. I get your points, but here's the thing. Even though he was sent to a place not of his choosing, if he would have just kept his mouth shut and been a company man with the Cavaliers, based on the reports that we've started to read that he and Dan Gilbert were becoming, I wouldn't say buddies, but they had bonded. That Gilbert had bonded with Isaiah and vice versa. All you got to do if you're Isaiah Thomas, in my opinion, is play as best you can, keep your mouth shut, and it's very possible that Dan Gilbert moves on from LeBron James and actually does throw you max money as one of the building blocks. But when Thomas was not only playing poorly but mouthing off, it became an untenable situation with him. And to me, Thomas created that mess for himself, and now he's put himself in a pickle where, I mean, you could cross the Cavaliers off the list of potential guys who would pay a lot of money for Thomas in the future. So I think he did a lot of damage. He brought a lot of it on himself.
I think that's fair to say. Like I said, he handled it terribly. He needed to go. He deserves all of the criticism you just gave him and much that I have given him too. I just feel that I feel bad that it came to that he was put in a position where he had to choose how to handle himself. He chose poorly. But again, it's just it's the nature of the beast. Kyrie wanted to move on. Boston said, see, is he, God, I just called Isaiah Thomas Zeke, as in the original Isaiah Thomas from Detroit. My apologies to the real Zeke. Okay. So he had to go, and now let's talk about Dwayne Wade, who, according to multiple reports that I have heard from a lot of people very close to the team, Dennis, and you cover the team because you're there in Cleveland. Maybe you can shine some light on this, too. But multiple reports were Dwayne Wade had to go. Not because Dwayne Wade was poison in the Isaiah Thomas way. He wasn't doing anything to intentionally harm anybody. But his close relationship with LeBron James dominated LeBron James. It dominated his time. It took him away from establishing relationships, friendships, chemistry, camaraderie with a lot of the other teammates because he spent all of his time with Dwayne Wade. Their bromance was real, and it was hurting LeBron's relationship with everybody else. And that, as much as anything else, is the reason why they felt like they needed to have addition by subtracting Dwayne Wade from the club.
Yeah, it's disappointing to say that, but I agree with you, Bob, to a large extent. I didn't want it to be this way, but I think Dwayne Wade was never comfortable in Cleveland, just as he apparently was never really comfortable in Chicago after leaving Miami. You're right, he wasn't an overt distraction, but there were issues. You know, again, a guy who's not comfortable on a particular team, and then his role is reduced, and I wonder too about whether it grated on Wade about the whole, you know, LeBron's little buddy, you know, type of thing, or his brother, you know, because it's clearly LeBron's team, and if you're Dwayne Wade, you got a lot of pride, you know, you're a Hall of Fame player, and you don't necessarily like having to hear all the time about how, you know, you're along for the ride with LeBron, and so I think it was best for all parties, and I thought the Cavs handled it with incredible class. Quite honestly, the Cavs could have said, we don't want to deal you to Miami. We want to keep you. And there was really nothing that Wade could do about it, but I thought the Cavs did right by the player, and Wade has not, you know, thrown shade in the Cavs' direction either, so it was essentially an amicable parting from an uncomfortable situation.
So you do agree that LeBron's ability to lead was compromised a little bit just by the presence of his, what he calls his brother?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. That would, I guess, presuppose that there were talks between the two of them about stuff, and I don't know. I think, Bob, that you hit it, though, a couple minutes ago. The big problem with this team was Isaiah Thomas. And, you know, Dwayne Wade to me was not a problem per se. Right. You had to get rid of Thomas, and to an extent Crowder, because let me just say something to the national media. Your sources within the Cavs locker room have dried up, okay? Because those two guys are gone. So you're going to have to find another anonymous source within this Cavs locker room, because your old ones are out the door.
I take that meaning very, very directly, and I agree with you, and I believe every single word of that. Crowder absolutely had to go. He was nowhere near the player he was in Boston anyway, let alone that kind of thing that you just described. Now let's talk about what they were able to do. Dennis, could they have done better? Maybe. Because maybe there were other guys that could have been had in free agency if the circumstances would have been different. But I got to tell you, I don't think there's any piece that they got that they didn't really need. They now are a much better defensive team at the point guard position with George Hill. They are much better in terms of their overall defense and speed on defense and ability to close out on shooting teams like you're going to have to in the NBA Finals, outside shooting teams, something that they didn't have. They are much more physical and athletic inside because of the defensively because of Larry Nance Jr. They've got scoring from Rodney Hood, who is a 16-point scorer. Jordan Clarkson can get shots off at any given time and can explode at any given time. I mean, I'm not saying it's a perfect team by any stretch, and I'm not saying they'd be the favorites against the Warriors or the Rockets. And I am only going off of two games together, but if you take the two games together against Boston and OKC, and you add that to the game tape of the aforementioned players that we have seen, and we know what kinds of players they are, they might have been able to do better at the trading deadline, but I don't know how. It is pretty damned impressive, that foursome and everything that they bring.
You're absolutely right, Bob. As I said, Altman was dealing with basically both hands tied behind his back in order to get these assets, and he was able to, as you pointed out, get guys to help at both ends of the court. I'm watching them against the Celtics and the Thunder, and I'm saying, for the first time in a long time, the Cavaliers have arms. You know, I mean, they actually have arms. I mean, you could see length, because for so long, the Cavs just didn't have any length. They didn't have any ability to cover and close out on shooters as quickly as they can now, and as with the length that they have. But yeah, there's so many aspects of the game that were improved. Because here's the thing, Altman didn't just get guys. He got guys specific to what the Cavaliers needed. And so that makes it, you know, in my opinion, doubly difficult. It's one thing to go out and make trades just to shake things up. He had to make trades to get guys to do certain things well, as complementary pieces to the puzzle, as opposed to, you know, I'm just going to bring in a great scorer, I'm going to bring in a great defender. He needed two-way guys, and he got them. So incredible job by Altman. And let me say this, too. Altman and Dan Gilbert, who's signing the checks and agreed to take on a lot of money and go way over the cap again, those two guys had to check their egos at the door regarding the Kyrie Irving trade. They had to admit and acknowledge, you know what, that trade is not going to be going in our favor. Okay, we're going to lose this trade, even though we still have the Brooklyn pick. It's going to be a bad trade. But we can't just sit here and try to fit the round peg into the square hole. We have to bail on this trade now because it isn't working. Their egos could have said, oh, we got to see it through. You know, one of these days Crowder is going to get better, and one of these days Thomas is going to get better. No, they had to do it now. They had to make the change, and they were willing to do it.
Dennis, let's talk about the off-the-court, immediate immediate off-the-court benefits we've just discussed, but I want to talk about the long-term impact of these moves as well. I read your piece on Cleveland.com before you came on, talking about the impact this will have on the attempts to re-sign LeBron James. Now, he has been, as we know, notoriously non-committal. It has bothered the hell out of me, to be quite frank, that he continues to sign just one-year deals or two-year deals, giving himself the option to get out pretty much at any time, and it leaves everybody else in a bad spot. It's hard for GMs to sell would-be free agents to come and join LeBron if they don't know if LeBron is going to be there. But these guys were not free agents. These guys were traded for, and there are good contract situations there in terms of team control. So how much of the decision to make these moves did Kobe Altman how much of it was you know, for winning the NBA championship this year, getting back to the finals and giving yourself a shot, versus long-term, we just made it really, really hard for LeBron James to walk away from this team?
Another beauty of what Altman did last week is that he melded what you just asked. He didn't just go all in for this year. I mean, he went in for this year, no question about it. But there's also a degree of hedge as well. He didn't give away the Brooklyn pick just to get a player in here. He felt like the value coming back for that Brooklyn pick wasn't good enough so he held on to it. And in holding on to it, you hedge a little bit about the future. You can also sell LeBron on, hey, you know, if you stay, not only do you stay with the, you know, these guys that we brought in, but you're going to be able to play with a, you know, potentially top five, top three draft pick coming out of this year as you enter, you know, the next phase of your NBA career. So Altman did an excellent job of thinking about the present, but also thinking about the future. And let me go back to something you meant. You know, you mentioned the piece that I did, and I had an accompanying video on it for Cleveland.com. And I get what you're saying about LeBron not committing, and I've been one of those who wished that he would. But in this case, there's another side to it. And I think LeBron's non-committal put the pressure on this organization to make these trades. That maybe if LeBron had been signed long-term, they figure, all right, we'll just ride this 2018 season out and see what happens. No. You know you have a deadline with LeBron.
Why do you think that? Dennis, explain that, if you would. Why do you think that? Why do you think that if LeBron was locked up long-term, they wouldn't have done everything they could to try to win a championship?
Well, because there's a chance there would have been complacency. Let's assume all the actors are the same. You know, that the trade has been made with Kyrie, you know, the Kyrie trade to Boston, you brought in Thomas, you brought in Crowder. Okay, LeBron's in for a couple more years. You know you have him. So you sit there and you say, let's let, you know, Isaiah work through this. Let's let his hip get better. Crowder's going to get into better playing shape. These guys will be okay. And we don't have to worry if 2018 doesn't work out quite right because we have LeBron. But in this case, because he's short-term, because your deadline is literally the summer, now all of a sudden you say, you know what, we don't have the luxury of time with Isaiah. We don't have the luxury of time with Crowder. We need to, you know, make moves to get this team championship caliber again, and not just cross our fingers about 2018.
I don't think they would have done that, but I do see your argument. Dennis, last thing before you go. 1 week ago, I was convinced that LeBron James was leaving. Now, 1 week later, because of the trades and the roster now, I am convinced he is staying. Because I cannot see a better location for him to try to win another championship. He does not want to go to the West and join the Lakers, even though the Lakers will have the chance to sign two max players with the deal in the room that they created with this trade. He does not want to go out there and have to deal with Golden State in the playoffs, Houston in the playoffs, San Antonio and the Oklahoma City in the playoffs. It is still a way easier path to the finals in the East if you're on the right team in the East. Which brings us to what? Boston, no way. They would never take him. And obviously Kyrie there, I mean, that would just be recreating that. Washington, he wouldn't do it. Toronto, he wouldn't do it. Miami, he's not going back down there to reunite with Dwayne Wade. There really is no other place for him to go to pursue championships now that this roster is being created this way than to re-sign with Cleveland, right or wrong?
Well, I 100% agree with you. 1 week ago today, LeBron was 100% gone because this team was going nowhere. It was stale, it was old, it was tired, it was slow, and they were going to get bounced early, and LeBron was going to leave, in my opinion. Now, it's a different story. I'm not guaranteeing that he comes back, but I like the chances a lot more. I mean, the percentage has gone from zero, to almost 50-50, in my opinion. And I know you say, well, you maybe you're overreacting to two games. I believe this team is going to only get better, and I think they will go deep into the playoffs.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
No, but also, you know, these two games, I don't think they can be overstated because for their importance. Because imagine, Bob, if the new guys come in and they go to Boston, even though it was only their first game, and they get trucked by Kyrie and the Celtics. Then they go to Oak City and get trucked by the Thunder. What do you think LeBron's going to be hearing all throughout All-Star Weekend? Oh, LeBron, no matter what changes they made to your team, you're still not going to get it done. You're still going to come up short. The narrative would be LeBron's definitely leaving. All the national media would be foaming at the mouth about where LeBron's going to go next. But because of what they did in these two games, quality road victories, now all of a sudden the narrative changes, and I don't think LeBron hears the questions. Oh, you're definitely going somewhere. Where is it going to be? Now it's all of a sudden, gee whiz, your team looks pretty good, LeBron. So
absolutely.
I think that's why these games were really important going into the All-Star break.
I think that's very well said, and I do think he is all but a mortal lock to be re-signing now a longer extension with the Cavaliers. These moves were that impressive and that important. Dennis Manilow, next time we talk, you realize we're going to have to be talking Indians. Pitchers and catchers reported today. So the next
time
we talk. I'm sorry?
Can't wait.
Neither can I, my friend. Dennis, thanks very much for the time. I always appreciate the chat. We'll catch up soon.
You got it, Bob.
It is 4 o'clock, and you know what that means. We've got a top-of-the-hour sports center coming your way, and on the other side of that, we go north of the state line and get up into the D, and we talk a little bit of Detroit basketball. David Fernandez talks about the Pistons' recent skid with us and whether or not Stan Van Gundy has that franchise on the right path or not. They traded for Blake Griffin and now have hit the skids again. What does it all mean? David Fernandez joins us next as we continue into hour number 2 of the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Garrett Rohnow as the American center and scores! Brian O'Neill scores the first goal of the 2018 Olympic Winter Games for Team USA. They're up 1-0 over Slovenia. Gunderson lets Little play it. Little pivoting forward. Sanguinetti a shot. Save. Rebound. Greenway scores! Jordan Greenway makes it 2-0 USA as he popped in a rebound off Crochelle's pads. And it's 2-0.
The Slovenian goaltender is on the bench. It's 6-on-5.
Picked up by Verlich. Verlich banks it out to Gregor to the left point. Looks at Robar and then shoots it into the scrum in front. Rebound. Score! Verlich pounded it home. And the game is tied at 2 with 1:37 to play. Mrazek goes on top. Orbas, Tichar fell, but he gets up, takes the pass, moving in for a shot. Never got through Mrazek, a shot, he scores! The Slovenian captain ties it late and wins it in overtime. Slovenia caps the comeback with a 3-2 win over Team USA.
That's a tough matchup, LeBron on the fadeaway.
Good defense, better offense.
Jetty off the front of the rim. Kind rolls for Jetty Osman.
And they're doing a good job here thus far.
LeBron right to the rack. JR, same spot, same result. Russell matched up with LeBron. Skip pass. George Hill, lob. And a beautiful look to Tristan Thompson. Rodney Hood, three ball on the way. That's good. Got outscored 13-10 with LeBron on the bench. And right back at it, LeBron with the left hand. Cavs just doing a nice job of keeping the pace. LeBron from way out. Wow, that's some range.
You know, Kobe did a heck of a job of understanding what our team needed. You know, it just wasn't working out for us. He made the changes that he felt that best fits our team. And then it's on me to make sure the new guys that come in, that I make sure that they fit in and make it as seamless as possible. No, I think they play with a lot of poise, you know, with the Lakers as well. Obviously, they're very talented. You know, the change of scenery, and I think they're just trying to take advantage of it. For us, you know, the guys that's here, we're just trying to make them as comfortable as possible. You know, we're going to have some bumps, obviously, along this road because, you know, we all new together, but we're trying to make it seamless as possible for the transition.
They had a lot of one-dimensional offensive players, everything built around LeBron James' greatness, and then a bunch of guys that did one thing. When you add guys like Jordan Clarkson, you add Hood, these are guys that can, George Hill, they can make plays off the dribble, they can spot up, catch, and shoot, they can slash, they can find people defensively. It's night and day what we saw from this team in the first half of the year.
There was just a joyous scene. We saw guys wishing each other well as they went into the All-Star break, exchanging phone numbers, telling each other, rest up, guys, stay safe, have fun. We can't wait to get back and do this again. Ty Lue, big smile on his face, and literally was miming as if he was lifting a weight off his chest and bringing it above his head and then just releasing his body to show that, man, so much has changed.
Jordan and Larry coming from the Lakers, they just, you know, they love this team, and, you know, having a superstar like LeBron on there that makes everything tick, and just got a bunch of great players that know how to follow suit, really. They won 2 big games, and it's a lot of fun to watch them. They look like they're having a lot of fun, and that's what basketball is all about.
Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number 2 of of the extravaganza underway on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader and remain so. Thanks for being with us. We're going to go up north of the state line into the D to talk a little more NBA. Hour number two of the extravaganza underway on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader and remain so. Thanks for being with us. We're going to go up north of the state line into the D to talk a little more NBA. We spent a great deal of time with Dennis Manilow talking about the new look Cleveland Cavaliers, who look like, once again, a lock to come out of the East, which they were supposed to be at the start of the season. Up until about a week ago, they were thought to maybe not get out of the second round, and now they're back to being a lock to go to the finals again. But we want to go from Cavaliers talk with Dennis Manilow to Pistons talk with David Fernandez. David, of course, writes about the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com. And David, thanks for the time, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I think you mentioned it just a moment ago. It's been a roller coaster, but, you know, trying to ride the waves, I guess.
You know, it's a weird thing, you know. It really has been one of those seasons for the Pistons. You know, if you just go back and look through the results of the entire season, very little in terms of consistency. You see a four-game winning streak, then you see a three-game losing streak, and then you'll see a five-game winning streak, and then you'll see a nine-game or a seven-game losing streak or whatever it is. It has just been up, down, up, down. And I can understand that to an extent in the early part of the first half of the schedule, especially when you consider the number of injuries that they have had. And but once the blockbuster was made, and Blake Griffin came on board, and they won four in a row, or five in a row, beg your pardon, one without him, and then four with him, I believe. I thought, okay, consistency here. Now, they're going to build, and Stan is going to build this thing around this particular, you know, superstar. And you know, they're really going to ascend from this point on. And then they somehow are in the midst now of a three-game losing streak, one of which happened against the dreadful Atlanta Hawks. So, you know, I guess I don't quite understand why we aren't building, or they aren't building, more consistency now that they have made that blockbuster trade and they have the go-to guy who's supposed to be the crunch player for you at the end of games.
Yeah, you know, I think something to take away just from the initial four-game win streak once they did have Blake Griffin was that all of those teams were on the second night of a back-to-back. So they were coming in with tired legs. You know, they had just played the night before, so you have a pretty favorable advantage when it comes to that type of situation, just in general. But also, you know, I think another element to this is, you know, the opponents are not, you know, they're not world beaters by any means. The Clippers are good. They're right there in the playoffs, you know, in the Western Conference. The Pelicans, frankly, just own Detroit. They've beat them 12 of the last 13 times. Anthony Davis now has points scored at both the Palace of Auburn Hills and at Little Caesars Arena as an opponent. So definitely a difficult matchup there. I'm more so concerned when you look at that Hawks loss. I think that's more of an indictment about, you know, this team right now than those other two losses. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the acquisition of these new pieces that are definitely, you know, Blake Griffin is an all-star level player and a couple other guys that are, you know, supposed to be chipping in. But I'm concerned in the sense of, you know, I think this has something to do with them being new to the system. Also, a little concerned with what I've been seeing in these fourth quarters, what I've been seeing in game-to-game action, where it just doesn't look like they're really that comfortable playing with each other just yet. So I don't know if that's something that's going to be resolved this season.
You know, that's a very interesting point, and I'm glad you brought it up because – well, first of all, I did not know about the second night of back-to-back and all four of those wins. That's a pretty amazing thing. I don't even know if you could draw that up if you wanted to. So that could be a mitigating factor in terms of all of those wins. And now you're bringing up the fitting in together and working things out. It's funny because I was willing to give the Cavaliers the benefit of that doubt earlier this season when they had the old roster, but then Isaiah Thomas was going to come back and it was going to cause some new growing pains as the rotation changed, as the new starting point guard changed, etc. And now I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, even though they've looked great now for two games. There's going to be that point where, you know, the chemistry isn't right in a challenging game and they're going to struggle a little bit. I hadn't thought about it with the Pistons, though. I just felt like because they were going great guns when Blake got there, and Andre Drummond, who was already having a great season, just stepped it up to another level now that he had a star-caliber front court mate with him, I just kind of felt like there is no chemistry issue. There is no honeymoon period here that you have to worry about. They're ready to go. But I suppose you're right. It can affect them in different times, I suppose, when you've only played a handful of games together.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, just looking at the basketball that's going on the court. You know, they've mixed up the system quite a bit now. It used to be a system where Andre Drummond, if there was anybody in that painted area, it was going to be only Andre Drummond. They were really kind of taking him out of it to begin with. But now they kind of run Blake in that type of role. So now Andre Drummond's in the paint a little bit more, and at times you're seeing both of them down there. And this team doesn't really have a lot of spacing when it comes to their starting lineup. Really the only guy that can hit threes on an actual consistent basis is Reggie Bullock. And then other than that, in the starting lineup, there's not really much there. So you're seeing a little bit of a clogged paint issue. You're seeing a little bit of guys not really knowing their roles. You're seeing it a lot worse, I think, on the defensive end of the floor. Sloppy transition defense, guys not knowing who's supposed to be picking up who. So there's all of these types of elements that are going on. And you know, I think that's been – the basketball has not been the prettiest even in those wins. Blake Griffin has had some good games, numerically speaking, but he hasn't really had – you know, too many games over his first seven in a Pistons uniform where he's just looking like a world beater himself. So there's those elements to it. And I think, honestly, until and if Reggie Jackson does come back this season, I don't really think you're going to see this team really start to kind of pound their chest and really kind of cement themselves. Now, they might sneak into the playoffs. That's not something that would surprise me, but they definitely have some work to do, and they really need to figure it out and quick.
We're talking Pistons basketball. David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com. Cushlin wants to get in here in a second, but real quick, just since you brought up the three-point shooting, you said Reggie Bullock is really the only one who's, you know, consistent from out there, and you're right at 45%. The next best shooter in terms of percentage is Luke Kennard, who's a 42% three-point shooter, but he's only getting about roughly 18 minutes a game, I would say. Do you think that from an offensive standpoint to open things up inside more for Blake, that maybe he needs more minutes? They do need somebody else who can stretch defenses.
Yeah, so it's kind of a tricky situation at that shooting guard slot because all three of those guys, Langston Galloway, I don't have his numbers pulled up, but I know that he's an above-average three-point shooter himself. He was just signed, you know, in this offseason at $7 million a year, three-year contract. So what you see when it comes to people criticizing Stan Van Gundy, and I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve it, I think he definitely does, is the rotations, you know. Some people will be upset if Luke Kennard's not getting minutes or if Langston Galloway's not getting minutes. All three of these players fit the same role. They're there to space, but only one of them is, you know, that guy that you can really count on a night-to-night basis, which is Reggie Bullock. Luke Kennard, you know, I think it's something where if the trust type of scenario with Stan Van Gundy, he likes him as a rookie, but I think as you're starting to see, as you near the playoffs, as you near these final third of the season, that he's going to be probably going with Galloway a little bit more just because I feel like there's more of an inherent trust there.
I think that's a good analysis. There is, you know, a lot of competition at that spot, and guys bring different things to the table, but they absolutely do need to stretch defenses more with that outside shooting. Jim Cushman, go ahead.
You know, thinking about the skid that they're on to right now, something I've also heard a couple of people, a couple of writers here and there, not a majority or anything like that, mentioned is, well, the emotion of being rejuvenated after the trade, you know, is done. Are you buying any of that?
I mean, not necessarily. I think there might have been that type of element to the game in that Clippers game. It was, you know, a reunion game for both parties. But then when you look at the Atlanta Hawks game, that's where I'm really more concerned about, you know, what was going on with the level of play there. That's where I'm actually, you know, not really buying that type of narrative, because that's a team you should beat no matter what.
We're talking Pistons basketball with David Fernandez at DetroitBadBoys.com. So you mentioned Stan, and you said, you know, a lot of people want to blame. He said not that he doesn't deserve it. So let's talk about what he deserves and what he doesn't deserve. If he doesn't make the playoffs with this team, and the big trade, of course, was his doing because he's pretty much in charge of the front office too, if he drafts this roster, or let me rephrase, if he assembles this roster the way that he did, and he made that trade at the deadline, and then he is also coaching, and if it doesn't get it done, how much more room is there for Stan? He's going into the last year of his contract, so if ownership did want to make a change, it wouldn't cost them a ton. It's not like they were going to have to eat two or three or four years of a Stan Van Gundy contract. Or maybe they keep him under contract, but they just let somebody else coach, keep him in the front office, or hell, keep him on the bench and let somebody else do the front office stuff. One or the other, or, you know, or all three. If they don't make the playoffs, is he in trouble?
I mean, I think that they're going to be definitely analyzing what they want to do with him moving forward. I wouldn't be surprised. Like I said, when they did acquire Blake Griffin, I think that that move cemented him at least living out his current contract. Now, but that doesn't mean that they won't judge the landscape and see what they can see that's going to be out there for possible coaching changes, or, you know, that narrative where, you know, maybe it doesn't work when you can have someone that's doing the president of basketball operations and also doing the coaching. So I could see that being an avenue where they ask him to relieve one of those duties. I'm more in the camp that I think they're going to let him live out this contract. And then from there, you know, I don't, if it's not working, especially after next season, after a full season of Blake Griffin and hopefully a healthy Reggie Jackson, then I don't think that they're going to bring him back if it's not working after next season. So that's really, you know, I guess it's kind of hard for say, but I do think that he's going to be living out that contract for now. But I think the questions are fair because Stan Van Gundy, when he was signed to this team and he was hired to be the president of basketball operations, said that this was going to be a 5-year window for him to make the Pistons an Eastern Conference contender, and they're nowhere near that right now.
Yeah, no, that's exactly correct. And that's one of the reasons I asked exactly how much room there is here for him, or how much rope for him, how much of a leash, whatever you want to call it, because they're not. You know, they don't seem to be trending, you know, step one toward, you know, the playoffs, step two in the playoffs, step three winning a playoff series, step four, you know, advancing and so on. They seem to be kind of, you know, regressing a little bit. And again, I know injuries have been a factor, but they're a factor for everybody at some point or another. So you can't really use that as an excuse. And if I'm a diehard Pistons fan, and I'm not because I'm a Cleveland native and I root for the Cavaliers, but if I'm a diehard Pistons fan, I just kind of, if I'm a regular visitor of DetroitBadBoys.com, I'm asking myself, are we trending in the right direction with this coach slash regime the way it's run, or do we need a shakeup here? Even if they keep him for the rest of that contract, as you point out, maybe you take one of the two primary responsibilities he has away from him.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think that that would be him as the president of basketball operations. I think that there's been enough moves that are more of an indictment against his ability to build a contending roster than there has been to say otherwise. Now, I do like the Blake Griffin acquisition, even, you know, understanding the contract details, even understanding, you know, the 10-year, the 4-year after this that you will have Blake Griffin. But, you know, I think that, and you're right, you know, Pistons fans, a lot of them are upset about the coaching scenario right now. You know, you look at comment threads, you look at, you know, if you're on DetroitBadBoys.com or if you're on the Facebook page there, a lot of the fans are calling, you know, for Stan Van Gundy. Now, I'm not there just yet, but just because I remember the carousel that was before Stan Van Gundy, and while you know, while this hasn't been the prettiest stretch over these past few seasons, it's still dramatically better than what was going on when you had Mo Cheeks and some of the other, John Kuster and, you know, some of the other guys that were coaching during that sort of 5-year, 6-year span. So, you know, it's going to be hard to tell, but I think the questions are already there. And this team, you know, making the playoffs would be a really big step this year.
David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com is our guest. Jim Cushling, go ahead.
You know, thinking of some of the moves that we're talking about, these questions, and legitimate ones they are, no doubt, on Stan Van Gundy. What are your thoughts? It's been now a couple games since the trade deadline, and the Cavs made the big splash. Of course, the Pistons made their bigger splash with the Blake Griffin trade beforehand, but they did make two small moves on deadline day, bringing in Jameer Nelson and James Enos. They're both averaging about 9 points, and Jameer Nelson almost 5 assists a game. Obviously, these are going to be bench guys even when Reggie returns, but talk to me about what you've seen out of the two newest Pistons in these first couple games since the deadline.
Really like the James Enos acquisition. I think that he's the player that this team desperately needs. They need guys that are able to do things without the ball in their hands. James Enos and Reggie Bullock are two of the best on this roster. James Enos is already one of the best players at cutting, at realizing when he's open, at making quick decisions with the basketball. He shores up the backup small forward slot where the Pistons were very weak up until that point, until that trade. So I really dig that acquisition, and I think, you know, the second round pick was well worth it to get him. Now, with Jameer Nelson, you know, he's a career 37% three-point shooter, so you hope that he can start to hit some of these open looks that he's had. He shores up the backup point guard slot, but I don't want to take away from the fact that the Pistons have probably one of the worst point guard rotations in the league right now. Just because Ish Smith is a good backup, but he's not a great starter, and Jameer Nelson is an okay backup that, you know, that's 36 years old. You know, it is what it is. He's a guy that you want to just make sure that he's not losing you games. You just want him to kind of keep the ship afloat. So I understand the move, but, you know, if you're relying on that backcourt to get you into the playoffs right now, I don't feel too much confidence in it.
David, maybe you already hit on it and I missed it, but what is the Reggie Jackson return timetable at this point? Is he back to basketball activities? Where are we?
So latest developments are that, you know, they took off the boot a couple weeks ago. He's been doing standstill shooting. He's going to begin running, during this All-Star break and then, you know, making lateral movements after that. So he's not in basketball shape. He's not making basketball movements right now. They're expecting him sometime in March, which is pretty vague. I'm at the point though, where if it's, you know, March 20th, and the Pistons are six games back from the eighth spot, I think you really have to question whether or not you bring back Reggie Jackson for that final month of the season, strictly because we saw what happened when you brought him back when he wasn't ready. His confidence wasn't there, his play wasn't there, and it hurt the overall team. I'm not willing to sacrifice his confidence, his, you know, just who he is as a player and his health to bring him back early. If it's really not in the cards to make playoffs this season, I'd rather have him rest. So I think that's actually going to be a question whether or not he comes back at all, depending on how competitive Detroit is at that time.
David, last thing before you go, and we appreciate your time here. We've got a bottom of the hour Sports Center coming up shortly, but just real quick, when's the last time you were flipping around the TV and you're just up moving your way up and down the channel guide and you saw WNBA? I'm there, and clicked and threw the remote down into between the couch cushions so nobody else could change it as you watched yourself some WNBA basketball. When's the last time that happened?
You know, I don't watch a ton of WNBA basketball. I will say that those girls can ball. Like, they are really good basketball players. But, you know, I'll watch it when it's the playoffs. You know, I think it's entertaining. Those games are usually pretty close, but it's not my first choice when it comes to sports, but, you know, that's the summertime, and that's when it's a little bit slower. So, you know, I don't mind watching a WNBA game, but it's not going to be my first choice.
Kush, when's the last time you watched a WNBA game? You could say it if the answer is never. It's all right.
I have watched one, but let's put it this way, Bob. I still think they had the Cleveland team. Remember, there was actually a Cleveland WNBA team?
Oh, yeah, the Rockers.
I think that's the last time I watched a WNBA game. Honest to goodness. It's been that
long. And there
long.
Used to be a Detroit team, too, right? Didn't Lane Beer coach it?
Yeah, Bill Laimbeer coached it. They won a championship.
Did they really? I would never have known that. The reason I asked when you guys last watched a WNBA game is because of this ridiculous, ridiculous story. Do you know who Angel McCautry is?
No, I don't.
Apparently, she was the number one overall pick in the WNBA draft back in 2009. She went on to be WNBA Rookie of the Year, four-time WNBA All-Star, and has already won the scoring title twice. And she's bent. She said, enough is enough. We should be paid the same as the guys. She says, she doesn't say. The truth is, the top WNBA players make roughly around $100,000 a year in annual base salary. That would include people like her. To compare, Steph Curry made $34.6 million this season. And that goes up to $45.7 million per season at the end of his contract. So she is saying we deserve to make more. Quote, pay us like they pay the men. I don't want to get paid more overseas. I want to get paid in my country. She said that top women are forced to play overseas where they can make 10 times as much, like up to maybe $1 million a year. McCautry has played everywhere from Russia to Lebanon to Turkey, and she said she's tired of traveling the world just to make money, so they should be paid by the NBA standards. And the reason I asked, of course, when the last time you watched is because does anybody think before they speak, does she not understand truly, or is she just being an idiot? Does she not understand that revenue generated is how salaries are determined. If nobody is watching you play, no advertisers are buying time. And if the advertisers aren't buying time, the teams aren't making money. And if the teams aren't making money, they're not paying you. For crying out loud, does somebody need to explain to this woman and anybody who thinks like this that the WNBA would be bankrupt and would have been 10 years ago, 20 years ago, however long it's been in existence, if it weren't being propped up for by the money-making machine that is the NBA, right or wrong?
I mean, that's the NBA does support the WNBA. They're the ones, they're the bankroll behind that league.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They do. They care. They are the ones who support it. And I have no problem with women playing basketball. I have no problem with there being a pro league. And I have no problem with the fact that it doesn't get good ratings. But you know what? Don't say silly things like we should be paid like the men. When you can get, 25 or 30 million households to turn on a game to watch you play on Christmas Day like Steph Curry can, then we'll start talking about paying you commensurately. But a commensurate amount. But when you can't get 15 people to watch your games on a given day, then you really need to understand better. So I just kind of wanted to see what your thoughts were on that, David Fernandez. God bless the women. Let them play, but please be smart. Understand the nature of economics. You get paid what you're worth by how much ad revenue you can drive. You don't get paid to play basketball. You get paid. Advertisers pay you so that they can advertise you or so that they can put your games on television. And if they can't, if they can't make money off of that, then you don't get paid. It's just that simple. All right. Sorry. Just had to throw that out there. David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com. Follow that website. Matter of fact, bookmark that one in your browser. You're going to enjoy it. David, thanks for the time as always.
Of course. Take care, guys.
Have a great one. All right. There you go. David Fernandez. We got to get out now. We got a bottom of the hour sports center coming your way. We're going to talk a little bit more of baseball, actually, or not more because we haven't really done a whole lot of baseball today. But we're going to talk some baseball. Are owners colluding? Are owners colluding to keep guys like Jake Arrieta, J.D. Martinez, and others on the sideline by not offering them contracts that they deserve? That's something we kick around after the Sports Center, which is next, right here on The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Right back with you as we roll along on this extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we will take you up until 5 o'clock, as always, with drive time coming your way then. And that's some really good thanks to David Fernandez and Dennis Maniloff, by the way. A lot of NBA discussions today, really for the entirety of the show so far. But good stuff with Maniloff on the Cavaliers, who looked so good against OKC, and David Fernandez on the not-looking-so-good Detroit Pistons. But I want to shift gears, Jim Cushion, a little bit. Now into this final segment of the show today, just to kind of talk a little bit about the start of the baseball spring training season. Obviously, just pitchers and catchers reporting right now. The Tigers did yesterday down in Lakeland, the Indians today out in Goodyear. But it's not those guys. You and I have talked about this a little bit in recent days and weeks. It's not the guys that are signed and reporting that we're interested in. It's the guys that are not signed. Now, one of the big names not signed up until just a couple of days ago is off the market, and that is when Yu Darvish agreed to a huge contract with the Chicago Cubs. But quite obviously, there are still guys like J.D. Martinez sitting out there and waiting. And the words that I'm hearing thrown around in baseball circles right now, Jim, from Tony Clark, particularly of the Players Association and certain agents, the word is collusion, and they're saying that these owners are, even if they didn't make a phone call to one another to say, let's set the markets lower, let's not pay these guys X, Y, or Z, they didn't call each other, they're feeding off of one another, that they're kind of using one another's refusal to sign as a kind of a wink and a nod that says, let's kind of take control of this a little bit. And the question becomes for me, Jim, is that okay? I mean, I know collusion, according to, the technical terms of the law, is not legal, but I don't know why that is. I'm not a lawyer, and at least in the sports vernacular, if the owners want to maximize their profits by trying to lower their payroll costs, they certainly have the right to do that. I would think so anyway. If I owned a gas station or if I owned a burger a restaurant and I wasn't making enough money by paying my workers, say, $12 an hour, and I needed to cut back to $10 an hour, either cutting them back or just, you know, kind of saying the new hiring, you know, incoming hiring wage is going to be $10 an hour. I'm going to change that so that it more positively affects my bottom line. That should be my right to do that. So I guess my question is do Martinez and agents and Tony Clark and Players Association representatives, do they have a right to complain if the owners do want to, even if it's, you know, a little bit collusive, I guess would be the word. If it is a little bit of collusion, do they have a right to complain about this, or should the owners be able to set the price?
I mean, obviously there's a market involved in all this, and there's a lot of things that are coming to a head, which is why you're hearing words like this being thrown about. First and foremost, baseball does technically have a history of this. It happened back in the 80s. And two, this has been just such an obscure, weird free agent market this year. And I'm not ready to go there yet, as you're pointing out, and we're finding out again that some are, because I need to see this happen multiple times in a row. That was part of what happened in the 80s. That's why I'm not ready to throw around that term. But as far as like players with such as J.D. Martinez and the example you laid out there, I mean, it is up to him to decide on whatever contract offers may be out there. And if an owner doesn't want to offer him as much money as he or his agent think, or as many years as that's a factor in some of these, then that's what the market apparently is this year. We've documented it over time these last couple years that guys like, you know, corner infield, corner outfielder, power hitters don't seem to be going for the ridiculous contracts that they might have 10, 15 years ago. And I think that's a slight change in how front offices think about some of those kind of things. But I'm still not ready to go to any collusion. Is it a funky market, and has it been this winter? Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been one of the more obscure ones we've seen in a long, long time. But I'm still not ready to go to the collusion route yet. I need more evidence.
There's an interesting article in the Los Angeles Times that I came across from about a week ago talking about this very subject. And it's talking about J.D. Martinez, but it's talking about others. And it's going back to the time you're talking about. And it quotes Commissioner Peter Ueberroth back then telling Major League Baseball team owners at a meeting in 1985. He said to them, and I quote, "You are so damn dumb." This is what he said to the owners. "Given the choice," he explained, "between pushing a red button that would give them a World Series win, but a $10 million loss on the season, or a black button that would give them a guaranteed $4 million profit, but a middle-of-the-pack finish, most of you would press the red button. You all agree we have a problem. Go solve it." That was the message that Peter Ueberroth gave the owners back in 1985. He essentially gave them the green light to collude, saying it's because you idiots can't help yourselves. You'll spend more money trying to win that championship and suffer a big financial loss rather than just have a competitive season, middle of the pack, and make money. He said, "You're stupid. Go fix that." And over the next few years, quoting now from the Times, the owners solved their problems by shutting down spending on free agents. By 1990, three arbitration rulings established they had colluded illicitly. They ended up paying $434 million, including interest, to settle the players' case against them. That sum would be equivalent to about $800 million today. Yet there are signs that the owners are colluding again to force down player salaries and lock in their own profits. That's the conclusion of some players, agents, and reading between the lines, the Baseball Players Association. The conclusion is based on a historically low level of free agent signings that effectively turned the offseason hot stove league into a cold stove. So that's enough from the article. But what it does go on to say, as I just paraphrase, is there is no evidence of that. There is some suspicion, and the circumstances seem similar, but there's no evidence whatsoever that there was a meeting like Ueberroth had, mm-hmm. that there was a phone call, a conference, or anything else. It's just a matter of, in my opinion, Jim, and we talked about this a little bit a couple of days ago, the word collusion isn't the C word that I think is more applicable here. It is the word copy or copycat. People are looking at what the Astros did going from 101 losses 3 years ago to a world championship, what the Cubs did last year, or, you know, now two championships ago, in doing something similar and saying, you know what, if we can't win the title, let's stop playing middle-of-the-road baseball and losing money. Let's play non-competitive baseball. Let's finish in the basement. Let's cut our payrolls way down and then build it up like, you know, the Cubs and the Astros did. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think it's collusion. I think it is copycat, and I think it's smart business.
No, I think it is. And clear, we talked about this a little bit last week when we kind of stumbled onto this subject that, you know, there's a lot of teams that are not in big market situations that are looking at what the Astros, and even though they're a bigger market, what the Cubs right about the same time both did. They tore down, and especially, of course, in the case of the Astros, they were awful for 3 years. 3 years in a row, they lost 100 plus games. But I don't think anybody in Houston cares about that one right now. And you're seeing a lot of, I think, smaller market type of teams, which are still the majority in baseball and with how baseball's financial structure works, that they think that's a better option for their club, you know, long term. I mean, you know, think of the Tigers right now, you know, for example. Yeah, they have a couple contracts like Zimmerman and Miguel Cabrera, but because of where they are currently as an organization, the only types of free agents, regardless of the market that they were going to sign this year, would be, you know, veteran cheap filler type of guys. You know, that's it. They weren't going to do much. And there's a lot of other teams who are taking, you know, that approach. And then if they can, they take what the Astros did. And as I kind of alluded to when we again stumbled on this last week, Bob, you try to do what the Astros did in terms of building up your organization. Then when they start getting to the majors, you hope that you give them on, you know, contracts that at the end of the day are kind of friendly to the team in terms of years and finances, and similar to how the Indians are right now.
That's the big thing here, it would appear. It's, you know, these contracts are about years. For example, J.D. Martinez, you know, former Tiger who went out to Arizona after his trade and did some great things and is expecting to sign how did Isaiah Thomas once refer to it? Back that Brinks truck up here.
Right.
That's the kind of contract he wants. And that offer hasn't come, at least for a long-term deal. He is getting, has received offers, big dollar offers for shorter-term deals, and apparently he wants more. Years. And according, I'm reading from a different article now, this one in the Boston Herald, also from 1 week ago, last Wednesday, week ago today. Whatever J.D. Martinez is waiting for, he seems prepared to wait a little bit longer. According to Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, Martinez has indicated a willingness to hold out until he gets a contract he believes he deserves. A key line from Rosenthal's story is, quote, he is also telling people that he is fed up with the Red Sox's inflexibility and would rather sign with another club. Sources say, end quote. A reasonable question might be, what other club? Nobody else is beating down the door to offer him, you know, $125 million. You know, the Red Sox offer is believed to be roughly 5 years and $125 million. Does he want a 7-year deal? Does he want a 10-year deal like Giancarlo Stanton got? Because if that's what he's looking for, it's never going to come, not from the Red Sox nor anyone else. And when he doesn't have a training camp to report to this week, or when the, you know, full squads report after pitchers and catchers, of course, you know, do their first work, mm-hmm. If he doesn't have a place to report, that is not the owner's fault. That is 100% his decision. Because the key word there is deserve. He thinks he deserves, because of his home run totals and RBI totals, he deserves a 7-year contract or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, you only deserve what someone is willing to pay you. And if someone is not willing to pay you that, that doesn't mean that they think you stink, and it doesn't mean that they're breaking the law and colluding. It means J.D. Martinez, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Jake Arrieta. It means that the market in baseball right now is in a down cycle because there are a lot of teams that have lost money to be competitive, not winning championships, but just to be competitive. Mm-hmm. And their owners are thinking to themselves, you know what, I need to start making money, and maybe we won't be competitive for a couple of years, but then we go back to the same circle we were just in, looking at the Cubs and the Astros and how they were able to turn that cycle from worst to first around in 2 or 3 years. That's not collusion.
And there's another factor.
They're not locking you out of baseball. This is your decision, JD and others, your decision to not take the deal that they are offering. I mean, you know, well, go ahead, Jim. I got more, but go ahead.
No, there's another factor, I think, you know, especially for someone like me who is not ready to use the collusion word until there's more possible evidence of that. And one of those to me would be another offseason. So you got the teams that are trying to replicate the Astros type of plan. And then you have another handful of teams who, in theory, the logic is they're trying to get their ducks in a row for things like the Bryce Harper sweepstakes next winter. And that's a factor in some of these, I think, as well. It's why,
but not really.
Well, yeah,
I think so.
It's why
after
the Stanton trade, you haven't seen anything out of the Yankees. They're almost public in there trying to get in line for that one. And they're going to need a ton for that.
That's my point. And that's one team, though. You know, I mean, there aren't a bunch of teams positioning for Bryce Harper. There's only one or two teams.
It's a small handful. There's no question.
Even a small handful. I mean, probably two, right? I mean, probably Yankees and Dodgers. I really think that's it. The Nationals aren't going to be able to compete with them with what they're going to be able to offer, so they're out. I don't think the Mets will. I don't think the Red Sox will, especially if they do end up signing Martinez to this long-term deal.
I can agree with that.
I think the handful is like two, maybe three, possibly. But my point is, it's not just those big spending clubs that we're talking about. It's the traditionally, what they're complaining about, what J.D. Martinez, Tony Clark, and others are complaining about, is not those big market, big spending clubs. They're saying the teams that used to be moderate spending clubs, medium-sized payrolls, are shrinking down to no payrolls. They're getting their payrolls down to under $40 or $50 million, for crying out loud, playing a bunch of kids as they try to rebuild and redevelop.
Right.
And that's what people, the Players Association, they're saying that's collusion. Guys like Martinez and Arrieta and others, it would seem, just want the most money for the longest period of time that they can get for any team. It does not matter whether they're competitive, whether they're going to a World Series or not. And they're mad that these middle-sized market teams with middle-sized payrolls aren't spending dollars on them now. The big boys already spent. The little guys aren't going to spend. And the medium guys are choosing to go down to little guy status rather than big guy status in terms of payroll. And it leaves them out in the dark. The bottom line is they have to lower their expectations. They have to lower their personal self-worth as far as I've earned this money. No, you have only earned, and I was going to say I had more, and so let me just hit this real fast because I know you want to talk about the Olympic hockey for a second. But just if I am a software developer, okay, and I'm really, really good, and I have, the last four or five programs I have developed have made my company X amounts of dollars, you know, maybe it's millions of dollars. And I think that entitles me to a massive contract with Microsoft or a massive contract with Apple or a massive contract with, I don't know, who else does software, whatever. And they're not offering me that. I can't sit here and say, oh, these companies are colluding against me. They're not paying me what I think I'm worth based on what I think my value and contributions have been in the past. I can't sue them for not hiring me at their wage. I either accept their wage to go and work for them, or I don't, and I go back and work for myself or go back to the place where I was before. Your value is not what you think it is, in my estimation, in sports or in business or in life. Your value is not what you think it is when it comes to dollars and cents. It's what the employer thinks your value is to them, and that is their decision. You cannot try to legislate or sue, you know, or litigate. Legislate or litigate your way out of that.
No, you can't. And I think, we're seeing a lot of things all kind of happening, you know, at the same time. And it's why, again, I'm not saying down the line they may not be off base, but I'm not ready to join them in those types of calls that you're hearing right now.
Because
more that has to be, you know, found out and into the future.
The argument, Jim, let me wrap this up so we can do some hockey real quick. The argument that we'll need to have on another show, maybe as early as tomorrow, is whether or not collusion should be illegal in the sports world. Because in my estimation, it should not be the Players Association that sets the salaries or the market. It should be the owners. They're the ones signing the checks. The players, honestly, and if you don't like the check that anybody is offering you, find another line of work. Let me know how it works out for you. You've been playing shortstop your entire life. You haven't been exactly putting together a big resume that's going to get you a job on Wall Street or anywhere else for that matter. But you know what? If you don't like the contracts that the owners have kind of put their heads together in a collusionary effort, that's right, or a collusive effort, you know what? That's too bad for you. Go find something else to do. The owners get to set the rate. It's kind of like, Jim, you know, it's like they don't even need to make that phone call and have that official, you know, let's agree to do this. It's two, there's a BP on one corner and there's a Sunoco on the other corner, right at the same intersection.
Yeah.
And you see what happens. As soon as one of them makes their price 205, the other one who was at 212 drops his to 205 also. And as soon as one raises his to 226, the other one raises his to 226 as well. Is that collusion? No. It's just that if that guy thinks that's what he can get, that's what I think I can get. Or if he's cutting his, I've got to cut mine to maybe one penny below him so that I can get more customers in my place. They didn't call each other and agree to keep their prices similar or exactly the same. They just work it out that way because they feel it's best for business. And that's their call, not the driver's call. The driver doesn't get to go in and say, I wanted a different price because I feel like I deserve it. No, the station owners get to do that. Kush, you had a thought on the USA Olympic hockey law.
Yeah, you heard me play some of the highlights from this morning, you know, on the montage. And for those who hadn't heard, because, you know, all the time changes, differences with the games being in Korea, these are all morning or while you're sleeping kind of deals. So they had a 2-0 lead. And remember, there's no NHL players, and that's kind of the crux of why I'm a little mad about this one today. They have a 2-0 lead. Everything seems fine. Give up a gold third. Okay. Then you give up the empty net kind of deal, you know, where you're down one and so you pull the goalie, get that extra guy. Yeah, they pulled that off with a minute to go. And then 38 seconds into overtime, Slovenia ends up winning. This is NHL players or not. This is not anywhere near one of the powers in hockey in terms of international. They only made their first Olympics ever last time out. And granted, they're a younger term nation because they're one of those that were one of the former Yugoslavia states or what have you. So it's not like they've been around forever the way Canada has, but I'm watching this game, and this is not necessarily to knock the kids that are out there. Most of them are, because there's no NHL players this year.
Right.
But my goodness. Are you happy now, Gary Bettman? Seriously? Because these are the kind of things that happen. I heard the commentators are talking, oh, you know, now it's wide open. Who knows who's going to win it? And I guess while that's true, had NHL players been on all of these rosters, FYI, Slovenia would have been almost the exact same team that was there in real life today. The U.S. would have won that game like 5-1, okay? I know the players, you know, liked doing this, and there's a financial issues and closing down their season, and that's part of the reason that the NHL isn't having their players play for all these teams this year. But to me, it really showed itself this morning in that travesty kind of way. It's doing hockey, the sport, no favors whatsoever by not having the guys there. They've been doing it since 98, and that's part of the reason you've heard me, Bob, say that out of all the Olympic sports summer winter, watch some Winter Olympic hockey because it's all NHL players all over the place. And it's not like basketball where you should be righteously upset if the USA doesn't win gold. No, the talent's very spread around amongst the various countries, but Slovenia is not one of them. And this, what happened this morning would not have happened if NHL players were playing. So I hope somewhere Gary Bettman is happy about all this because I firmly believe that not having these guys there is just not good for hockey in general. And you know the popularity, you know, in this country. And I know we have Mike in, with his hockey background, and it is Wednesday, so we'll have the Face Off the Hockey Show a little bit later. But we all know that hockey is the number four sport amongst the major four, and there's no question about that. This has been a way I felt in since 98 when they started this. A great way to get the casual fence sitter type of person, you know, interested. You have that, you know, country USA kind of thing on the one hand, and And you're finding out who all the best players in the NHL, if you hadn't been paying attention, are. It served a double purpose. And now that that's not there, you're going to see funky results like USA losing to countries that have they have no business losing to, regardless of the roster. And you're going to drive away that casual fence sitter because they won't know any of the guys. It's just
Jim, the
music is by this.
The music is playing, so we got to hit it here. But I'll tell you this. I agree with you, and I disagree with you. You have me on the you could have done great for hockey, because one of the reasons why nobody watches it here in the United States, or it's the number four sport, a distant number four, by the way, is because nobody knows the players. Maybe because people are watching because of national interest in the international competition, you learn about some of those players. Oh, that's the guy who plays for the Blackhawks, or that's the guy who plays for, you know, the Islanders, or whatever the case might be. So that's true. Agree. I disagree as far as the getting upset that Team USA didn't win because today against Slovenia or anybody else, simply because it is just a bunch of kids. It is college kids. I don't know them from Adam. I don't know them from any college hockey player right now or any high school hockey player. They're just a bunch of kids. If they win or lose, it's not going to ruin my day. But I do agree with you that Gary Bettman is kind of hurting by not allowing the NHL players to go. The advancement of the sport from the knowledge standpoint that people might gain from watching it if they were there. All right, music is really playing now. We got to get out of the way because Drive Time is coming up next. For Jim Cushlin, for David Fernandez, and for Dennis Maniloff, my guest today. Great stuff by those guys. Have yourself a great day. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.